Welcome to those of you who are visiting this evening. It's nice to have you with us. I'd like to dedicate the talk this evening to harmony. To harmony within and harmony between us. And I'm essentially giving the talk in response to a note that I received this afternoon. Is it possible to elaborate more in detail how to heal wounds with love and kindness when they arise? Loving oneself also, is it the same, done the same way? So we've talked some about how to, we've talked quite a lot about loving kindness and forgiveness particularly, and so I'd like to respond to that question just by describing in more detail just how we might work this in our practice. And I'd like to give an example, and the details of the story are unique to one person. And I think it's really important for us to notice what the universal methods are for working with, say, an old wound that comes up. Sometime in the early 1980s, I was at a three-month-long meditation retreat at Insight Meditation Society, and I remembered something that happened when I was 10 or 11 years old. My older brother had gone out duck hunting with his best friend early in the morning. So I was 10 or 11, my brother was 12 or 13. And I was left alone and left out. And I had never hunted before, but I decided that I was going hunting. And I had been well trained in shooting rifles and was familiar with firearms. And so I got a .22, and I went out into the woods and found a crow blind that I knew that my brother had. My brother was an experienced hunter at 12 or 13. So I sat in the crow blind waiting for crows to come into the trees, and I was sitting very still. I guess I had that capacity even at that age. I was sitting very still, and at one point a partridge, a small bird, walked into the blind. So I was sitting with my legs extended. The partridge, or I guess we might call it a grouse now, we call it in New Hampshire, we call it a partridge. my legs were extended. It couldn't have been more than 2 feet beyond my feet. And I slowly brought the rifle around and shot it at point blank range. And it was wounded and it ran out. I wasn't able to find it. And it caused anguish. So that was the first and the last time I ever hunted. I went home, I put the rifle away, and was never tempted again. So this memory came up during this three-month retreat. It came up during a time when I was in very deep practice. Concentration was strong, mindfulness was strong, the mind was very still. And so I relived in incredible detail that incident and felt much greater anguish than I had felt at the time when I was 10 or 11 years old. So how does one work with that? So essentially it's a trauma that that has come up of harming a living being in the midst of practice. And so I'd like to describe, just to respond to that question, it may be helpful to you in detail. I don't know how I worked with it nearly 30 years ago in that retreat. I have sort of more refined tools now than I had then. So I'd like to talk about how I would work with it now if that same memory were to come up for the first time. So strong feelings. And the initial experience actually was of a kind of just a raw pain. So it was very difficult, I think, to distinguish any one particular emotion or mind state from others. It was just raw pain. So the first important thing that I would do now, and I hope that I did then, was to separate the story that runs through the mind from the emotional pain. You know, I'm sure you've had this experience. If something dramatic or difficult has happened to you, there's a very strong thought pattern, and often a very repetitive thought pattern that runs through the mind. We tell ourselves a story about what happened again and again and again. And it's really clear to me that if we actually want to heal an old wound that has come up, we're never going to heal it by thinking about it. We're never going to heal the pain by running the story, the endless loop of story. And so it's the first and really critical task is to uncouple that thought process from the emotions. The thoughts are actually secondary. They're effects. And the cause is the strong emotion. The strong emotions are actually fueling or driving the thinking. Does this make sense? It's really, and I know how hard this is. It's easy to describe this, but you know, when we're in some very painful situation, as it's happening or after it's happened, or if we remember some painful situation from earlier in our lives, doesn't matter whether it's present or past, it takes a lot of clarity to be able to do that. It's not that the story is going to stop happening. It's not that we cut off the story and silence the mind. The thoughts keep coming, and they can come with great force. It's basically making the choice to take our attention away from the story to pay attention to the feelings. So what I'm beginning to describe here is not the note asks how to heal wounds with love and kindness. And I'd actually like to give you more in your bargain here. And offer how we can heal the wounds with love and kindness, and compassion and forgiveness, but also with awareness and wisdom. And it takes strong awareness. You know, the first thing we have to do is recognize what's happening. What's happening here? And what's actually happening is a painful emotion in response to a memory and a story about it. So we uncouple the two. So having uncoupled them, not pushing the story away necessarily, but just bringing our attention away from the story, the thought process, and being with the emotion, how do we work with the emotion? Or the emotions, in this case. And the best way I have found to work with it is to feel the emotions in the body. All emotions register in our bodies. So one of the things that we have to be able to do is to, and Leela and I have talked about it a lot in the course of this retreat, we need to be able to actually turn toward the pain rather than to turn away from it. Is to come out of denial. You know, come out of the feeling of, hey, this is inconvenient right now. I'm having very deep practice. I'm really concentrated. I'm really mindful. And man, enlightenment is only 5 minutes away. And what is this terrible memory coming up? You know, that is delusive thinking. The memory has come up because it wants to be healed. Please come in if you'd like. Please. The memory has come up because something needs to be healed, and that's by far the most important thing that's happening. So it takes a certain amount of understanding and also a certain amount of courage to say, okay, I'm turning toward this whole business. So we turn toward, most important, toward the emotion, toward the pain. And we try to feel it in our bodies. And one suggestion is, if in this case, it was extreme anguish. It was very, very strong emotion. It can be useful, especially if the emotion is very strong, not to stay just with the sensations associated with that strong emotion, because it can be overwhelming. What can be useful, and I'm borrowing here from the concepts of somatic experiencing for those of you who know that tradition, what can really be useful is to locate, and I'm pointing here because for me, a lot of strong emotion registers in the middle of the torso here, through the heart chakra and above and below it, sometimes in the belly. Is to find a place in the body that is not involved with the emotion, that is not caught up in the emotion, that some place in the body which is neutral or strong feeling. So you'll find, you know, there can be very extreme trauma where the whole body is engaged. And then you have to just be with the whole body. But most of the time, I think for most of us, there will be a place of pain and there will be a place of neutrality or strength. And I'm pointing to my shoulder. The shoulder hardly ever gets caught up in strong emotion. And so to what I have found very useful in terms of working with this is to bring the attention, you know, bring the attention carefully to that part of the body which is feeling strong or neutral, and then to bring the attention to that part of the body which is registering the emotional pain. And if the emotional pain is very strong, it's useful actually to bring your attention around the outside of that experience instead of going into the middle of it. And then there's this rapid oscillation of neutrality, pain, neutrality, pain, neutrality, pain. Does this make sense? And if you're willing to be with it on that level, in that way, letting go of the story, at some point, that what feels like a massive pain will start to break up and you'll actually be able to find separate emotions, distinct emotions, and you can work with those individually or singly. So in this case, as I remember it, there was terrible remorse at having harmed a living being. Remorse and guilt. There was shame at having harmed in that way. And there was very deep grief. So to be able to take each one of these emotions and to work with them separately, to work with the feeling of grief, to work with the feeling of shame, to work with the feeling of remorse or grief. So, uncoupling the thought process from the emotions, focusing on the emotions, working on the emotions in the body, finding a way, if the emotions are very strong, of alternating attention from what is neutral in the body to what is painful in the body. By working on the causative level with the emotions, eventually, and being willing not only to be aware of them, but to accept them. It's hard for us to learn, it's hard for us to train ourselves actually to accept what is very painful. But more and more, as we do this work, we understand the value of that, of actually embracing what is painful, knowing that by embracing it, we're actually healing. We're healing our experience. And that acceptance is love. So you can see the use of awareness here and the kind of discriminating wisdom which can distinguish one thing from another and to work with things in that way. There's awareness, there's discriminating wisdom, and then there's this quality of loving acceptance for the experience. if you stay with it long enough. And it's also can be very useful at times if the breath is neutral, to alternate between the experience in the body of emotional pain and the neutrality of the breath, of using the breath as a kind of anchor and coming back and forth and back and forth. Eventually, those states of consciousness will move through because they're not actually being reinforced by the thoughts. There's this wonderful kind of, it's not so wonderful actually, there's this dreadful sort of loop process of where if there's some kind of strong emotional pain, as I was experiencing, remembering what I had done when I was 10 or 11 years old, the thoughts reinforce the pain, the pain reinforces the thoughts, and the thoughts reinforce the pain, and the pain reinforces the thoughts. And probably everyone here has had that kind of experience. You're not healing it, you're reinforcing it. And on some level, we can re-traumatize ourselves by staying caught in that loop. By stepping out of that loop, we're actually allowing those emotions to shift and change and to move through. And what we find, if we're really willing to be with it, if we're really willing to embrace it, if we're really willing to work it, the next time that memory comes, those emotions may be less powerful. So that's the method that we can use for healing, say, the pain of a memory, a wound, a past wound, or a present wound when it happens to us. And there's more. For me, it's really useful to see, and we've talked about this actually in the question and answer period, it's really useful for me to see and to understand that all beings harm because they're suffering, not because they're cruel or mean. We can let those labels go, and simply to see people are blinded by suffering, their consciousness is blinded by suffering, and that's why they harm. If they were not suffering, if their consciousness wasn't occluded in some way, they wouldn't be harming. And so that child, that 10 or 11 year old child, I really know how much suffering he had. He had a lot, and he was very confused. And so when I understand that he harmed out of suffering, it's a direct antidote to the guilt and the shame, because compassion comes. Oh, he did that because he suffered so much. I'm sorry that he had that much suffering. Do you see that this wholesome state of consciousness, of compassion, comes and is the direct antidote to the guilt and the shame? And there's another understanding that I find really helpful. In fact, it may be the most helpful thing for me in terms of healing these old wounds. And that is to try to understand the conditions that gave rise to the moment of harming. And it's really interesting if I go back and look at that child and look at the environment that he grew up in. That child was born right at the climactic moment of the greatest human suffering that has ever happened in history. A child was born in April 1945. That global conflict had cataclysmic suffering. He was born into that moment, and he grew up. He was born into that war, during that war, toward the end of it. And he grew up with people who had very fresh memories of all that violence. And he grew up among people who actually perpetrated that violence, the returning soldiers. So there was a culture of violence. And there was a culture of violence in the family, in the home. There was a great deal of personal violence in that household. And there was the culture of violence of hunting, that in that rural New Hampshire environment, actually every man hunted. And you weren't a man unless you were a hunter. And it wasn't just a sport as it is now, it was actually had an economic function. I grew up in a very poor family, and the food was needed. And so if you can imagine, you know, all of this social conditioning of growing up in such a network of violence, to understand that I felt left out. I wanted to be included because my brother was going hunting with his good friend. I wanted to be included. I wanted to be considered a man in that culture. I needed to take on that role in order to do it and not be a sissy. If you can see all of that conditioning going into it, it was considered a good thing to bring home game. Partridge would have been eaten in my family. So understanding that conditioning, so helpful. And then taking a broader view of the conditioning, just really taking a wide view of the conditioning, that moment of shooting the partridge was when I stepped out of the culture, I stepped out of the culture of violence forever. You can see it's not entirely healed. Something in this heart decided that it was not going to be violent anymore. And so I grew up with a lot of personal violence among intimates. I grew up in a culture that was very violent. And I simply decided this is not going to happen anymore. And I have not been physically violent since. When I was drafted during the Vietnam War, you know, I was prepared to, at that time, I couldn't apply as a conscientious objector. I was prepared to go to prison or to go to Canada. And then they didn't want me because I was gay. So I didn't have to go to prison or to Canada. For once, homophobia worked. But I was really determined. You know, I'm not going to participate in that culture of violence any longer. And so as I look back on it and see that this was the great turning point of a life, in a way, then I can actually appreciate. I can appreciate how this heart actually had to have a violent moment in order to turn. Do you see, understanding the conditioning and understanding in a wider sense the conditions of how that event actually changed the whole course of a lifetime. And then, as you know, in recent years, I've had a lot more exposure to the shamanic worldview. And from the point of view of the shamanic worldview, that partridge showed up. It was a messenger. And sacrificed its life so that there could be this turning. So understanding the conditions, it's so helpful. And I really find that in the 10 or so years ago, someone who was very, very dear to me really did some very wounding things. And years later, this person wrote to me and said, I really hurt you, and this is unsolicited. I really hurt you in three ways. And I want to tell you what those ways were, and I want to apologize for them, and I want to tell you what was going on in my mind when I did them. And I read that letter, and it was completely over between us. The conflict was totally over, and we're actually very, very close friends now. This is really understanding that somebody's conditioning when they cause harm. And then one final thing. That is really useful in terms of using wisdom. And this, to me, is very, very helpful. And that is to see it's only conditioning that is acting. There's no self. There was no one shooting and no one being shot on the deepest level. It was simply conditions. And when one takes out the concept of self, with all the stickiness that's involved in the concept of self, and one sees that it is only conditions that are unfolding. And because of certain conditions, that event happened. And because of conditions for the partridge, that event happened. It was the nature of the partridge's karma, just as it was the nature of that child's karma, to come together in that particular way. So with all of this understanding, and the final thing, you know, just one other element that I find so helpful, you know, the compassion comes when you see that there was suffering involved. There was the suffering of the perpetrator and the suffering of the victim. And there's compassion for both. And loving kindness comes when you essentially can see the basic goodness of the perpetrator and of the victim. And as I look back on that child, I know he was basically a good being, a gentle one, a kind one, who had one little foray into hunting. For some, my older brother brought home a dead rabbit. I cried. So his essential goodness was there, and I can see that, and I can feel love for him. And the essential goodness of the bird also I can see, and I can extend love. So with all of these things, all that I've described here, this whole process involving awareness used in various kinds of ways, involving compassion, involving love, and involving the wisdom that comes to see that it's only conditions that are unfolding. From all of those wholesome qualities of consciousness, unpacking this experience, it is possible to come to a very deep level of forgiveness. I forgive the child. And so that sense of profound remorse and anguish isn't there anymore. I'm still moved by the event, very moved by it. But I'm not blaming the kid. Is this useful? You know, and we can work it the other way too. You know, I'm describing something that happened to me as the perpetrator of violence, but I've also been the victim of violence, especially a lot of it when I was a child. And it's actually possible for me to go back and remember some events, some really difficult, very, very painful and violent events, and I can unpack it in exactly the same way. I can feel, you know, I can remember the event. I can see the way in which the thoughts can go on forever about it. And I can uncouple the thoughts from the emotions, in this case, a lot of anger. You know, in fact, murderous rage. A lot of anger, a lot of fear, a lot of grief. And to work those feelings and to work through them so that their charge becomes less and less powerful. And then to be able to do the same thing, to realize that the one who committed violence toward me was suffering. It's really clear to me, absolutely clear to me, that he was suffering. And so I can feel compassion. And I can see his basic goodness. You know, my father was a very violent man, and it took me a long time to see all of the beautiful things that he did for me, all the loving things, all the very kind things that he did for me. He was both the more caring and the more violent of my two parents. And so I can see his essential goodness and extend compassion to him and extend love to him. And I can see the conditions that gave rise to his act of violence, his uncontrolled behavior. And I can also understand that it was only conditions. And so I feel like I'm pretty close to 100% forgiving of the biggest perpetrator in my life, the most violent person in my life. So this is how we can actually really heal. really heal these experiences. It's a way, what I've described, the process that I've described, involves both an internal healing, and so the internal conflict is more resolved, and there's more of a sense of wholeness and harmony in one's own heart as I forgive myself for what I did when I was 10 or 11. For example, there's more of a sense of internal harmony, but there's also much more of a sense of harmony with others. You know, I feel in harmony with that partridge. Sounds strange, but I do. I feel incredibly connected to it. We have a deep karmic connection. And I feel actually profound love and compassion and forgiveness toward my father, you know, who died in 1964. But I still feel extraordinarily connected to him, and I have a very strong aspiration to help him, if I can. I don't know if he showed up in my life again. I don't, you know, I basically said, if it takes a million lifetimes, I'm going to help you, Dad. So it's a healing, internal healing, it's an external healing as well. And we don't have to only talk about the big, difficult, painful events of our lives, either the past coming back, like that memory, or those memories, or, you know, really dramatic and difficult events in our present lives as we live them. We all have them. We can use these techniques before unpacking any of these experiences. It doesn't have to be just memories. But I think it's really useful for us to use these qualities as well, as in an ongoing way. I actually found it very painful to hear such hatred expressed toward George W. Bush. And Richard Cheney. And Donald Rumsfeld. These people did tremendous harm, but I don't find that hatred helps. I disagreed profoundly with what they were doing and why they were doing it, but it is really important for me to generate compassion and loving kindness, even if I want to take forceful action to try to stop them from doing what they're doing. We don't have to hate. We don't have to condemn. We don't have to feel separate. Either with the public events in our lives, there's a couple of wars going on right now. Have you noticed? Still going on. You know, it's in the public events of our lives, the kind of horrific suffering that is happening because of greed, aversion, and delusion, or in our personal relationships. All of us have conflict in our personal relationships. How are we going to approach those conflicts? Is there a way that we can actually use every one of these techniques to come into greater harmony with others? It's great if people can show up and do it with us, but if they can't show up and do it with us, we do it on our own. These methods can be used in the same way. I've really seen, you know, if somebody has been really unkind to us, to realize there's no self there. It's just conditions. It takes a lot of the energy out of it. And to really try to understand what is the conditioning. You know, I got into quite a bump with my next door neighbor this summer. And my next door neighbor tends to be quite demanding about what they want done, you know, in the neighborhood. And we share a driveway and we share a well. And I kind of quietly sort of tried to mollify my neighbor. And then at some point, I just put down a boundary and said, no more. And it's very useful for me to look and see what is the conditioning that caused me to respond as I did. Oh, passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. Passively trying to mollify someone instead of being clear about the boundaries from the beginning, you know, and then putting up with it up to the point where, boom, there was a forceful establishment of boundaries. And then actually look, trying to see the conditioning of my neighbor. And I say this without judgment, but I've never seen any concern by my neighbor for the well-being of other beings. There's a profound narcissism there. It's just everything is self-referential. And so it's actually impossible for there to be a kind of reciprocity. I have these needs, you have these needs, let's see how we can both get our needs met. It's not going to work in that situation. When I see that conditioning, I'm so much more open and spacious about it. Does that make sense? You know, just really seeing the conditioning, seeing it's not self, seeing the basic goodness and extending love, seeing compassion, seeing, oh my goodness, there's a lot of suffering there. This is one very isolated human being who is estranged from their children and their grandchildren because the only concerns in life are self, and you get very isolated when you do that. So extending compassion, extending loving kindness, extending forgiveness to myself and to my neighbor. It's the same work of unpacking the feelings, letting go of the story. All of it is exactly the same. And then just really making an effort. You know, I'm describing how we can sort of unpack conflict when it happens, but there's a way in which we can actually prevent conflict from happening by being compassionate and kind in an ongoing way with as many people as possible. You know, I've talked about this a lot, and forgive me if it sounds like a broken record, but we all want to be loved, and we all need to love. And why on earth do we withhold love from each other? But we do. It's bizarre when you step back and look at it. And so, you know, to have the commitment is to actually to try to connect, really to connect, to be present for, and really to connect with every single being that you encounter. And how that can make a difference. And we were talking about touch the other day. I can actually remember, you know, it's very rare, at least in Anglo culture, it's not so rare, I think, in Hispanic culture and other cultures, but it's very rare in Anglo culture for strangers to touch each other. And I can remember incidents of strangers touching me with kindness. You know, occasionally it's the waitress who calls me hon, you want more coffee hon, touches me on the shoulder. There's that. But you know, just a few months ago, I was, and some of you have heard me share this story, I was leaving Costco, and the young woman who was there, you know, when you go out of Costco, you get your receipt checked, and so I handed this young woman my receipt as I was rolling my goods out of Costco, and she said, "How are you?" And I said, "I'm fine. How are you?" And she looked at me and said, "Okay." And she checked off my receipt, and she handed it back to me. And then she reached up and touched me on the shoulder, and she said, "If everyone were as kind as you are, I would feel a lot better." And all I said was, "I'm fine, how are you?" But I meant it. And I looked her in the eyes. I connected. You know, and I just gave her a smile and walked on. But you know, that's just one little example. Instead of being shut down as we're going past this person, you know, who's going to check our receipt, is it possible to actually make a deep human connection, even if it's momentary? It is, if we practice it. There's going to be a whole lot less conflict when we connect. And it's possible for us to connect in most situations. And even if somebody is being hostile and is being very separate in their behavior, it doesn't mean that we have to be hostile and separate in return. It's possible to see their basic goodness and to love them. It's possible to see that they're suffering and to feel compassion. It's possible to see that there are just conditions unfolding that are causing this person to be aggressive and hostile. Just conditions. And that there's no self there being hostile. And so if it is possible, we can train ourselves actually to respond in friendship with compassion and loving kindness, even to people who are not nice to us. It can really change things around. I was once in Massachusetts, I lived right next to the cabin I was living in. I was right next to a conservation area, and I walked there all the time. And there was a beautiful, exquisite little reservoir in the conservation area. And I used to go skinny dipping in there. And I was skinny dipping with a couple of friends, and I'm totally blind without my glasses. And I look up, and there's this blue blur up on the... And I thought, oh, no, not a policeman. And this guy yelled out in a really hostile voice, "You know you're breaking the law?" And I said, "Yes, I know that." And we got out of the water, and I put on some clothes, and he said, the chief drinks this water, and he doesn't take kindly to skinny dippers. And I just quietly explained to him that I lived, you know, on the edge of the conservation area, and I come down here every now and then, have a swim. And I was just being friendly and very simple with him. And he said, "Well, you know, there is a place down in the brook over here where it's dammed, where you can go in, and nobody cares if you're skinny dipping." And I said, "You know, that's true, but you can't actually swim. You can get wet." And we just had this conversation. And I could just see him stepping down his hostility, you know, because I wasn't responding in a defensive way. And eventually he said, "Don't let me catch you in here again." And he walked off. You know, there's just one example of what we can do in terms of a situation that could be very hostile that didn't have to be. Making the commitment, if it feels appropriate, to respond with compassion and love and connection and care and attention and presence to every being we encounter. And how would the world be changed if all 6.5 billion of us decided to do that? So you know, what I've been talking about here is how we can heal old painful stuff or present painful stuff. But as simple as it sounds, it can be really, really helpful, you know, to be kind and compassionate in every encounter that we have. And who knows how many conflictual situations actually get prevented by that friendship, by that friendliness, of responding to each being as if they were our close friend, which is exactly what the Dalai Lama does. You know, he says, "My religion is kindness," and that guy practices it, if you've ever been in his presence. You know, he looks at you, and he is absolutely there with you and with nothing else. And what if we were to do that? So that's just some sense about how we use this practice actually to unpack painful experience so that it passes away, so that we don't carry the wound with us. It's easy to describe, it's not easy to do. But if we practice it, you know, if we practice it continually, we get better and better at it. We catch it all more and more quickly. So let's sit for just a minute. finding a way to live in harmony with ourselves and with others, of coming to harmony and healing with the old wounds, with the new wounds, and also finding a way of establishing and maintaining harmony to prevent wounds from happening. May we all find a way to live in harmony. Thank you.